Well, I think it's books, and more books is the subject of conversations. The only thing we've been talking about at Spencertown Academy for the last 6 weeks or so. This weekend, of course, is the annual Festival of Books, and this is the 7th annual festival. So we there have been many hundreds of volunteer hours since the beginning of the summer that have gone into getting ready for this, and we are just about ready to go. Putting the finishing touches on it today.
And the centerpiece of all this is of 10,000 gently used books. Is that right? And where do they all come from?
That's right. And I think I've had my hands on 9,999 of them. In fact, that was the genesis of the festival. It really began very modestly. As a book sale. We were casting about, as most nonprofits do, I'm sure you can relate, for another way to raise some funds to support the work that we do in the community. And the idea of a book sale came up. And that, as they say, is is how it all began. And now we're looking at something that has really grown into quite an extensive literary weekend. But the book sale itself still stays at the heart of the event. And we begin collecting donations from members of the community right after the 4th of July. And I'm convinced now that people have some kind of a internal clock, and they keep a bag of box of books by the door. As soon as that collection period starts, they start coming in. And what has always made this really special is that it is such a great community of readers that the quality of the book donations that we get is really extraordinary. These aren't the musty volumes that have been sitting in someone's barn for 6 or 8 years.
What? No Reader's Digest condensed books? No romance novels?
Well, I won't say none. There's always one or two that make their way through.
Do you keep getting donations even through the sale, or is there kind of a cutoff point?
No, last weekend was the final date. Because the other thing about the way we organize the sale, and that's part of the appeal. It's not just that there are great books, but we've got this incredible volunteer crew that works at presenting the books in a way that makes it very easy for people to shop. So 10,000 books is a lot of books to look at, but they're very carefully organized and sorted so that it is easy for people to find what they're looking for.
And about what do they sell for? What are the prices like?
Very affordable. last year we began with a slight sliding scale of prices so that the early buying preview party that our members and friends are invited to on Friday night, we start a little bit higher price, where we started about $5 that night. But they go down gradually in price. So by Monday, everything in the building is a dollar or less. So as a general rule, we're looking at prices that are in the $2 to $3 range for most books.
Are they marked?
They're categorized. So hardcover fiction is one price, softcover fiction is another price, children's books. And one of the things that we take a lot of pride in is that we really keep the prices of the children's books down as low as we possibly can, because we think that's part of our mission is to, as you know, the Academy is very deeply involved in arts and education work. So the idea of putting books into children's hands is something that we're all in favor of. So we work hard to keep those children's book prices as affordable as we can, so that everybody can go home with a bag of books to read.
Do you have any audiobooks for sale by any chance?
We do indeed. And it's interesting. One of the things that we think about every year is, how will electronic publishing affect this event? As more and more people start reading on their Kindles or their iPads, eventually we assume that's going to have an impact on the volume of books that are donated. And that actually hasn't happened yet. But what has happened, on kind of the upside of that, is that I think people are switching their music collections to digital. So we have been getting extraordinary donations of music libraries on CD. And I will, a little heads up for the opera lovers who are listening, that somebody made just an extraordinary donation this year with several boxed sets of complete operas. So, and if you've looked at the prices of those new, you know that that's something that's quite a bargain. So all of that other media, the recorded books, CDs, videotapes, DVDs, that's all part of the mix. And there's one section of the auditorium that's set aside for that.
Oh, it's all inside upstairs in the Academy? Is that where the book sale actually takes place?
Book sale is in every nook and cranny of the Academy. the auditorium, the upstairs space, is the main sale room, and that's where the bulk of the used books and all of the media are upstairs. In our downstairs gallery, that is the smaller of the two galleries, is devoted exclusively to children's books, and everything is kind of organized, and I forget I'm on radio. I'm pointing down at the floor to show how we keep the books low because of our the little short people who are shopping in that room. So,
can you give any of our listeners just a little brief background of what Spencertown Academy is, and if they don't know?
Sure, absolutely. Well, the name itself is always, if you really don't know who we are, the name is always confusing, because Spencertown Academy Arts Center is housed in an 1847 Greek Revival building that was once the village schoolhouse. And before that was actually originally built as a teacher training college of sorts to train young men and women in the area to teach in local public schools. So we reside in this really quite beautiful historic building. And the mission, we are a community arts center. So we have two gallery spaces where we present rotating exhibitions of contemporary art from local and regional artists. We also, as I think I mentioned earlier, in the last several years, we've put an increasing focus on the work that we do with our arts and education program, which is called Arts Voyage. And we work, that's a program where we take teaching artists directly into the public schools in an arts integration model, which means that we're working alongside classroom teachers in a real partnership with classroom teachers, working on existing classroom curriculum, teaching through the arts. And it's been a highly effective program. We ran a pilot program with the Chatham schools for 5 years. And beginning last year, we rolled out into the Ichabod Crane School District. And we have our sights set high. We hope eventually to be in every public school in Columbia County that will have us. So that's the bulk of the work that we do. But the Academy itself is a real resource, an arts resource for the community. There are all kinds of activities that take place there. There are monthly music jams and yoga classes and a singing school. One of your announcers, Sherry Mayorga, is bringing her singing school to the Academy. There are children's ballet classes. So there's just, one of those, you have a similar kind of model in a multi-arts center with the Hudson Opera House right here in Hudson. But we're a smaller version of that, a little bit further out in the woods. So we try to be an arts resource for our community. So that's who we are, and that's what this is all in support of.
And the book festival has a lot of programs for children. In my reading of the schedule, can you tell us about those?
Well, you're right. We do have a weakness for children, but there's also plenty for adults. So this is primarily, I think, of everything we do, this is more of an adult event than a children's event. But we don't neglect our young readers and friends. And the two special programs that we have happening for kids this year, Saturday morning at 10, we're bringing a special guest, the word madcap is used a lot, but I think in this case it really applies to a fellow named Alan Gowen. And Alan Gowen is a balloon artist. And he does a program that is really quite wonderful where, you know, we've all seen somebody take a balloon and twist it into the shape of a dog. But Alan has a program called Balloon Storybook Theater, where the children from the audience become the actors in the stories that he's telling. and he actually creates costumes for the kids out of balloons. So he will, you know, if he's telling the story of the three little pigs, you know, somebody will be a pink balloon pig, and it's really quite fun. And it's because one of the things that we've seen over the years is that many of the children who attend those Saturday morning programs tend to be preschoolers and younger kind of kids, and although they're very happy to sit and listen to you tell them a story, they're not so interested in listening to authors talk about their work. So we've gone in a different direction with the children's program. So we're hoping that this is really going to be a lot of fun. And the other thing that's always been kind of a signature of the children's programs at the festival is that every year we have a special storybook character, a costumed character. And we've had, over the years, we've welcomed Frog and Toad and Clifford the Big Red Dog and Curious George. And this year's special guest is Lyle Crocodile. And so for those who don't find a six-foot green crocodile terrifying, we hope they'll see him as a lovable and favorite friend. Because that is one of a favorite storybook character that's having a special 50th anniversary of the original publication of those books this year. So we decided we'd invite Lyle in for the weekend.
Well, what's going on for adults?
Well, as always, the main stage, we were talking about how things are organized, and while the books take up the bulk of the interior space at the Academy, we bring in a big old tent and basically fill up the parking lot behind the building with the author tent. And that throughout the day on Saturday and Sunday, there are a series of author readings and book signings. And a couple of really, of course, I think they're always quite interesting, but what we've done this year is something where we're exploring related topics handled in fiction and nonfiction. So beginning on Saturday, the first speaker on the main stage program is an author named John Kelly. And John lives over in Sandusfield, Massachusetts. And he has just published, his latest book has just come out, and it's called The Graves Are Walking. And it is a nonfiction, a deeply researched treatment of the Irish potato famine. And it's just garnered incredible critical acclaim since it's been released this month. And even no less a character than former President Bill Clinton blurbed the book. So, and just had nice things to say about it. But John has a way of writing about some of the most catastrophic events in human history in a way that makes them really compelling and immediate and personal and relevant to today. Because when he talks about the Irish potato famine, he is able to frame it in terms of, you know, political issues that I think resonate very strongly with the situation we're talking about today in terms of, you know, I don't want to characterize it as class warfare, but certainly class differences and tax policies and things that I think a close reading of this book would suggest that the Irish potato famine needn't have been the great catastrophe that it was. So John will talk about that in much more with much more authority than I can. So we're all looking forward to that. And then he will be followed at 1:30 on Saturday by our 2012 distinguished author, and distinguished he is indeed. That is Frank Delaney, and Frank Delaney is an Irishman by birth, who has written an almost infinite number of books, essays, podcasts. He is truly a Renaissance man of letters, and the book that for which he's probably most well known was his runaway bestseller called Ireland, and it is a fictionalized history of the country, but his theme is everything is told through the lens of the oral tradition of storytelling, and that's very much an interest of his. So I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation between Mr. Delaney and Tom Lee, who is our arts and education director, who is himself a professional storyteller and has devoted his professional life to that calling. So the two of them, I've been privy to some of their planning emails, and I think we've struck a chord here. So the tradition of Irish storytelling will be very much on display on the stage on Saturday. And then similarly on Sunday, we're looking at again kind of a fictional and nonfiction treatment of similar or related topics, beginning with Joshua Henkin, who has written this is his third novel, and to great critical acclaim. And the story is called The World Without You. And it begins the year after the death of a journalist, a war journalist, who is serving in the Middle East. And it's very much a Daniel Pearl type of story. That's the character is obviously modeled to some degree on Daniel Pearl. And the novel centers around what happens to his family as a result of his death in the war. And so it's a deeply felt and very emotional story, and just beautifully written. I think it's very touching, and one I think readers will really enjoy. And then that will be followed at 1:30 on Sunday by a fellow named Sean Parnell, who was a lieutenant in the 10th Mountain Division, and served several tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. And his book is called Outlaw Platoon. And it is a, as they say, harrowing real-life story. And believe me, when you read it, it is a harrowing real-life story of his experience in the war. And Sean is now now out of the Army. He's actually pursuing his PhD in clinical psychology. But he writes and still very much identifies himself as a soldier and a leader. And so that I think to us, when the planning committee was looking at this, the idea of looking at these similar subjects through very different lenses, I think, is an interesting way to approach it. So those are some of the highlights of what's happening on the program.
Do you have eats and drinks?
Oh, Richard, you would. yes, we've got our cookbook cafe, because one of the things we've found that tends to happen at this event is, you know, people will go shopping and they'll come out with an armload of books, and like what could be better than to sit down with a cup of coffee and just, you know, start to thumb through the books that you brought and compared with friends. So there's a lot of that happens. This year we have our friends at the PTA and the Girl Scouts are chipping in to organize that with donuts and coffee and other similar indulgences for people to have a treat. And our friends at the Spencertown store right across the road are serving lunch all through the day. So there's plenty of opportunity to refuel while you're at the festival.
You said that the parking lot in the back has been taken up with a tent. Is there any other place to park?
Yes, well, people who know Spencertown Academy know that the parking lot doesn't accommodate a whole lot of cars to begin with, so it's small loss, in fact. But yes, when folks come to the event, you will be directed to the town recreation area, which is just a few hundred yards beyond our driveway, and there's parking there, also around the village square. We will have people directing traffic and helping people park, and we do have some very able and willing young volunteers who are there to help folks out to their car when they buy those box loads of books that everybody's going to want to go home with.
You're on Route 203 in Spencertown, right?
We are. 790 Route 203. And it's 790 Route 203. We're midway between the Route 22 and the Taconic State Parkway. And the web address, for people who haven't been taking copious notes during this conversation, the entire schedule is online at www.spencertownacademy.org. We're also on Facebook, so either one of those places will get you the information with a detailed schedule of the events.